Harry!
Sandy, you devil! You gave me and Peter the fright of our lives!
I thought he was a Kaffir witch doctor. Come to get me!
Peter's right. He looks like something from a nightmare. What are you doing, bossing a band of dervishes?
That was the only way. If we hadn't got you out of that place, your crew should have been jolly well cooked. Now, Dick, old man, run on for your life!
Greenmantle by John Buchan. Dramatized by Patricia Hanna. Part 2. January 1916.
It was 2 months ago that I had been summoned from soldiering in France by Sir Walter Bullivant. The Foreign Office had got wind of some secret plot by the Germans to start a holy war against us in the East. Sandy Arbuthnot, Mr. John S. Blenkiron, Peter Pienaar and I were determined to discover the German secret and prevent it succeeding. But our only clue was 3 words scrawled by a dying man on a piece of paper. Kasradin, cancer, and VI. We had made our separate ways to Constantinople. Mr. Blenkiron as a sympathizer of the German cause, I as Cornelis Brandt, a Boer seeking revenge on the English, and Sandy as the leader of a band of Turkish gypsies, the companions of the rosy hours. In that disguise, he had this very night saved Peter and me from being arrested by the Turkish police.
You two have given me and Mr. Blenkiron a pretty anxious time.
You're safe enough here, Major, but you've cut it mighty fine.
What place is this?
You may call it my humble home. We've been preparing it for you, Major Hannay, but it was only yesterday I heard of your friend.
Ah, yes. Allow me to introduce Peter Pienaar, master of Feldcraft, hunter of elephants and Germans. Peter, this is Mr. John S. Blenkiron and the Honorable Sandy Arbuthnot.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Pienaar.
Always happy to welcome another hunter into camp.
Thank you, Bess.
Now, Major, officially, a Dutchman called Cornelis Brandt was to be arrested tonight and handed over to the German authorities.
Uh-huh.
But Germany will find difficulty in getting the body. Such are the languid ways of Oriental despotism.
I looked at Blenkiron, lying on the sofa, shuffling his patience cards with his old, sleepy smile. And Sandy, dressed like some bandit in melodrama, his lean face as brown as a nut, his bare arms all tattooed with crimson rings, and the skull cap made of a fox pelt, drawn tight over brow and ears. It was still a nightmare world, but the dream was getting pleasanter.
You boys are ready. I want to know how our mutual inquiries have prospered.
Well, you first, Mr. Blenkiron.
Well, I have to confess to you, gentlemen, I have failed.
Well, you did your best.
Oh, Germany has some trick at hand, but I'm darned if I can put a name to it. What about you, Captain Arbuthnot?
Well, when I left London, I went to Smyrna. I had friends there I could count on. I'm a blood brother to the chief of the Turkish gypsies. So before the day was out, I was a member of the Company of the Rosy Hours.
Uh-huh.
It stands for Islam and the Old Ways and is the last hope of the Orthodox. The companions can dance the heart out of the ordinary Turk. You saw a bit of one of our shows tonight, Dave. It was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah. If you like that sort of thing.
Oh.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, I got to Constantinople and contacted Mr. Blenkiron. The rest, you know. And now for business. I haven't got to the bottom of things, but I've solved the first of Harry Bullivant's riddles. I know the meaning of Kasradin.
Well done, Sandy.
There's a great stirring in Islam. They make no secret of it. These religious revivals come in cycles, and one was due about now. The details are quite clear. A seer has arisen of the blood of the prophet and will restore the caliphate to its old glories and Islam to its old purity. Mm-hmm. The Orthodox believe that they are on the eve of a great deliverance.
How does Germany come into this?
Well, how? I don't know. But I could see quite plainly that Germany has some hand in the coming of the new deliverer. The ordinary Turk loathes Enver and the committee, but he has some queer, perverted expectation from Germany. They talk about it, I think, quite openly. It's called the Kabahe Hurye, the Palladium of Liberty. The prophet is known as Zimrud, the Emerald. But no one knows where Zimrud is or when he will reveal himself. All that I could learn was that he and his 4 ministers are coming from the West.
And Kasradin, what about that?
There's a very famous Turkish romance called Kasradin, the home of the spirit. It's one of those old allegorical half-comic miracle plays which takes a week to read. This tale tells of the coming of a prophet. And I found that some spoke of the new revelation in terms of it. The curious thing is that in the tale, the prophet is aided by one of the few women who play much part in the hagiography of Islam. The prophet, too, is not called Emerald.
I know. He's called Greenmantle.
How on earth did you find that out?
From a Colonel von Stumm. He's in on the secret and mentioned the name Grunmantel. The last I saw of him, he was relaxing in a bath of cold water with, I hope, a sore jaw.
Well, very sore if I know you, Dick. Yes, yes, Germany is certainly at the heart of the plan.
They can't delay too long before they deliver the goods. If we can stick it out here, we must hit their trail. By the way, I've got another piece of evidence. I've solved Harry Bullivant's third puzzle.
D.I.? Well, that was the most baffling of the lot.
Because we assumed it was a letter of the alphabet.
It isn't.
It's a numeral.
Of course.
Yes. You said that in the tale of Khazreddin, a woman is the ally of the prophet. Same thing is true of Greenmantle. I can give you her name. It's von Einem. Hilda von Einem.
Well, if we find her, we'll have done the trick. Where is she, this Hilda von Einem?
I reckon I can put you wise on that, gentlemen. I saw her no later than yesterday.
What? You know her?
Yes, yes. She is a lovely lady. She also happens to be the owner of this house.
Good Lord!
How on earth did you meet her, Mr. Blenkiron?
Oh, friends in high places.
We go all the way across Europe.
Then we end up in the home of the riddle.
No, it's not a matter for laughter. I would rather you had mentioned any other name on God's earth. Various political bosses in this city haven't much to them, but I have met the Frau von Einem. And that lady's a very different proposition.
But who is she?
That is just what I can't tell you. She was a great excavator of Babylonish and Hittite ruins, and she married a diplomat who went to glory 3 years back. It isn't what she's been, but what she is. And that's a very clever woman.
And she lives here, you say?
No. She owns this house. She doesn't live here.
Well, then where does she...
That I don't know.
Oh, I can find out.
Well, you won't find people unduly anxious to gratify your curiosity about Frau von Einem.
Oh, there are ways. Now, I've got to clear, for my day's work isn't over. Dick, your past is blotted out, and you begin tomorrow morning with a new sheet. Right. Blenkiron's the man to thank for that.
Yes.
He was certain you'd get here, but he was also certain you'd arrive in a hurry with a good many inquiries behind you. So he arranged that you should disappear and start afresh.
Your name is Richard Hanau.
Uh-huh.
Born in Cleveland, Ohio, of German parents on both sides.
Right.
One of our brightest mining engineers in the apple of Guggenheim's eye. You arrived this afternoon from Constanza. The clothes for the part are in your bedroom next door. And I'll rustle up something for Mr. Pinar.
No, I'm no actor, Dick. I cannot be different from what I am.
You can play my servant, Peter.
Oh, good, good.
Now, you and Mr. Pinar must give me your clothes, the ones you've got on now.
My clothes, Bess?
You have a strange taste in souvenirs, Sandy.
They're for the Turkish police. The current in the Bosphorus is pretty strong, and these sad relics of two misguided Dutchmen will wash up tomorrow about Seraglio Point. In this game, you must drop the curtain, neat and pat, at the end of each scene if you don't want trouble from the missing heir and the family lawyer.
I walked out of that house next morning with Blenkiron's arm in mine, a different being from the friendless creature of the night before. I was splendidly dressed in a navy blue suit with square padded shoulders, a neat black bow tie, and a brown bowler. Over that I wore a greatcoat lined with wolf fur. I pride myself that I made a very fair shape at the lingo of the Middle West. We visited the market, as tourists would do, then sat in a small garden overlooking the Bosphorus.
Balan. Balan. Balan, Effendi.
No, go away.
Balan, Effendi.
Yeah, I guess I'll have one, friend. Yeah.
The blessings of Allah on you, Effendi. Balan. Balan.
What do you want with a balloon?
Oh, nothing, sir.
Balan.
I shall let it fly free once I have removed this mighty interesting piece of paper from the string.
Is that why we're here? Is your morning's work over?
I've reckoned you've tumbled to it. Thanks to my network of spies, I am the best informed man in Constantinople. Now, we can get down to work, Mr. Hanau. To get the confidences we need, we've got to be at the heart of the show. So, I settled I would be a big engineer. I talked to Enver Bey and the committee about the uses of water power, about what might be done in Mesopotamia in the way of washing the British downriver. They knew of my reputation as a hydraulic expert and were tickled to death to rope me in.
And
my part in all this?
I told them I wanted to help her. And I told them about my friend, Richard Hanna. So, you're going to be welcomed and taken to their bosoms just like John S. was. But we can't go back on our tracks. If we wanted to leave, they'd be very polite. But they'd never let us.
That's what I was afraid of. Mm-hmm.
We've got to go on with this adventure and nose our way down into Mesopotamia and hope our luck will hold.
But now that we have a rough idea of what the Germans are planning, wouldn't it be better to make a run for it?
No. I reckon not. We still know mighty little about Greenmantle. I reckon our landlady is the real boss of the show. I opine that the hapless prophet has no sort of time with that lady, and that he will soon wish himself in paradise. For if Almighty God ever created a female devil, it's Madame von Einem. That woman's mad and bad, but principally bad.
It looks as if our job were a long way from the end.
Oh, it's scarcely begun, Mr. Hanau.
Since that first night, I had never clapped eyes on Sandy. He had gone clean out of the world. Blenkiron and I were presently going to Mesopotamia, but unless we learned more about Greenmantle, our journey would be a failure. Our only hope was Sandy. We waited for news. Anxiety makes me restless, so Peter and I got horses and rode out through the suburbs into the open country.
We should have headed back long ago, Dick. It's too dark now to find the road.
Well, we'd better dismount and lead the horses. I haven't the foggiest notion where we are.
And well, look on. Ah, yeah, there is a house. Off left, in front of us.
Oh, for heaven's sake, guide me to it. There isn't a light or any sign that I can see.
Lead on. Go on, walk on.
How far away is this house?
That's the wall, Dick.
Hey, there's a gate here. No one's used this for some time. I'm in the garden. Stay with the horses, Peter, while I investigate.
Yeah.
A bit late to be paying calls, and I don't want to walk in on some old fella's harem.
Sandy? Dick?
Dick, what the devil are you doing here?
Peter and I were out riding and got lost. Sandy,
good
what the...
God, man, you've never been in greater danger in your life.
Why?
Quick, into the bushes. The car's coming. Keep still.
I might not see us.
Damn!
What?
Now we're for it.
Sheriff, Fendi.
The woman who had spoken sat in the back of the limousine. She had a mantilla of black lace over her head and shoulders, and with one slender, jeweled hand, she kept its folds over the greater part of her face. I saw only a pair of grey-blue eyes and the slim fingers.
She is missing, Sheriff Effendi.
Better never, Effendi.
Yananazda beris mi var.
I have to ask pardon for trespassing in your garden, ma'am. Fact is, I and my servant went for a ride this afternoon and got good and well lost. We came in by your back gate, and I was prospecting for your front door to find someone to direct us. But when I bumped into this brigand chief, who doesn't understand my talk...
Bah, eri ya, ma, ne de dini an lami arum.
Oh, no, bana barakin sis. Birat ya, banidir.
I'm an American. I'm here on a big government proposition. I hate to trouble you, but if you'd send a man to show us how to strike the city, I'd be very much in your debt.
Will you come into the car? At the house, I shall give you a servant to direct you.
She drew in the skirts of her fur coat to make room for me. The soft cushions and the subtle scents filled me with acute uneasiness. Women had never come much my way, and I knew as much of their wiles as I knew about the Chinese language. Sandy closed the door. The chauffeur switched off the light. I had never been in a motor car with a lady before. I knew who she was. I was alone with Hilda von Einem.
I have heard of you. You are called Richard Hanau, the American. Why have you come to this land?
I'm an engineer. Thought I could help out with some business in Mesopotamia.
You are on Germany's side?
Why, yes. We Americans are supposed to be neutral, and that means we're free to choose any side we fancy, right? Well, I'm for the Kaiser.
You have chosen well.
She turned to face me. The black mantilla slipped onto her shoulders. Her cool eyes searched me, but not in suspicion. She was sizing me up as a man. I was horribly fascinated. This slim woman with her fair cloud of hair, her long, delicate face, and her pale, bright eyes had the glamour of a wild dream. I hated her instinctively, hated her intensely. But I longed to arouse her interest. To be valued coldly by those eyes was an offense to my manhood.
Richard Hanau, listen to me.
Suddenly, I realized that this woman was trying to cast some spell over me.
Richard Hanau, what come you forth to seek?
I was conscious for just an instant of some will battling to subject mine. It passed quickly, and for a second her eyes drooped. I seemed to read in them a kind of satisfaction, as if they had found more in me than they expected.
You are not like the fat American Blenkiron, a lover of shoddy power and a devotee of a feeble science. Now there is something more than that in your face. You have faced danger many times?
Yeah, I've faced danger.
You have fought with men in battles?
I have fought in battles.
You have courage. Richard Hanau, from the land of pious follies, I ask, what come you forth to seek?
Well, I know nothing of the East, but it's from the desert the purification comes.
You are on our side, but you are not of the Germans with their hankering for a Rococo Empire.
When mankind is smothered with shams and phrases and painted idols, a wind blows out of the wilds to cleanse and simplify life.
You are of the household of faith. You will presently learn many things, for the faith marches to victory. Soon you and your companion travel eastwards.
Yeah, we travel to Mesopotamia. We have our passports from Ember Bay.
Now tomorrow you will receive new passports. I have need of you. And you will go with me. Not to the flats of the Tigris, but to the great hills. I shall send one of my people to fetch your horses and your servant. He will guide you to the city.
Thank you.
I have heard well of you, Richard Hanau. Tonight, I have seen you. We shall meet again. Farewell.
Another whiskey, Sandy.
Thanks, Dick. I need it.
I was mighty pleased to see you tonight. Where have you been all this time?
The Companions of the Rosy Hours were summoned to perform at Frau von Einem's villa for her and the four ministers. Hilda von Einem has welcomed me as an ally.
Oh, it couldn't have worked out better.
Dick. Dick, this whole job is getting very difficult, very dark. I found out the meaning of Harry Bullivant's second word.
Cancer.
Yes, it means just what it reads. Greenmantle is dying. He has been dying for months. This afternoon they brought in a German doctor to see him, and the man gives him a few hours of life. By now, he may be dead.
Well, then that busts the show. You can't have a crusade without a prophet.
Well, I wish I thought it did, but do you think that woman will be beaten by such a small thing as the death of a prophet? She'll find a substitute. One of the four ministers, or someone else. Oh, I tell you, Dick, she's a devil incarnate.
Yes, it's a strange business.
Thanks. Greenmantle is often in great pain, but he struggles to meet the demands of his protectress. I never saw such a man, Dick. He's the greatest, greatest gentleman you can picture. He's a dreamer and a poet, too. The West knows nothing of the true Oriental. It pictures him as lapped in colour and idleness and luxury. But it is all wrong. The bliss he yearns for is an austere thing. It is the austerity of the East, and that's its beauty and its terror. The Turk and the Arab come out of big spaces, and they have the desire of them in their bones. They settle down and stagnate, and by they degenerate into that appalling subtlety which is their ruling passion gone crooked. And then comes a new revelation, a great simplifying. They want to live face to face with God. They want to get back to the noble bareness of the desert. It is always the empty desert and the sky that cast a spell of them.
Sounds a bit inhuman to me.
It's the humanity of one part of the human race. It isn't ours, but it's jolly good all the same. There are times when it grips me so hard that I'm inclined to forswear the gods of my father.
Steady on, Sandy.
Sorry, Dick. Greenmantle is the prophet of this great simplicity. Hilda von Einem runs the prophet because she shares his belief. Only what in him is sane and fine, in her, is mad and horrible. You see, Germany also wants to simplify life.
I know. I told her that in the car. And I talked more rot to the second than any mortal man ever achieved. It'll come to haunt me for the rest of my days.
Dick, did you ever hear of a thing called the Superman?
Yes, it was a time when the papers were full of nothing else. Yeah. I gather it was invented by a sportsman called Nietzsche.
It's a craze of the new fatty Germany. It's a fancy type that could never really exist. Mankind has a sense of humour which stops short of the final absurdity. There could never be a Superman, but there might be a Superwoman.
You'll get into trouble, my lad, if you talk like that.
It's true, all the same. Women don't see the joke of life like the ordinary man. There is a superwoman, and her name is Hilda von Einem.
Oh, Lord. I thought our job was nearly over. Now it looks as if we've only started. Sir Walter said that all we had to do was find out the truth.
He didn't know about that woman.
What can Blenkiron and I do?
I honestly don't know. But I'm very clear about my own duty. She's let me in on the business, and I'm going to stick to it in the hope that I'll find a chance of wrecking it. We're moving eastward tomorrow, with a new prophet if the old one is dead.
Yes, we're going with you. An hour ago, your lady sent our passports for the journey to the Great Hills.
What the deuce does she want with you?
What the... Oh, say, boys, I've got something pretty considerable in the way of news.
What?
There's been big fighting on the eastern border, and the Turks have taken a bad knock. It seems the Ruskies have descended from their mountains, and now they're sitting down outside the forts of Erzurum.
Oh, the Great Hills. Well, we're going to Erzurum, don't you see?
The Germans are playing their big card. They're sending the Greenmantle to the point of danger to rally the Turkish defence. Huh? Oh, we're going to be in it up to the neck, and heaven help the best man. I must be off now, for I have a lot to do. Au revoir. We'll meet soon, in the hills.
Good luck, Sandy!
Peter and Blenkiron clung on for dear life in the back of the old Studebaker I was driving along the icy, rutted road to Erzurum. Hussein, one of Sandy's band of ruffians who spoke a little English, was our guide.
We have crossed the Caravel there. The way will be easier now, Effendi.
The traffic on the road reminded me of that awful stretch between Kassel and Ypres. There were troops by the thousand, striding along with their impassive Turkish faces. One of the officers shouted to us as we passed.
You have beaten the French and the British. Now it is Russia's turn.
We shot out of drizzling rain into brief spells of winter sunshine and then into a snow blizzard. And always before us, the long road unrolled, with somewhere at the end of it, two armies locked in a death struggle.
What's that big river, Major?
I believe it's the Euphrates, Mr. Blenkiron.
Then that's the waters of Babylon.
Yes.
Great snakes. And I should have lived to see the fields where King Nebuchadnezzar grazed. What's the name of that big hill?
Ararat, as like as not.
Ararat? Boo! Holy Moses!
Before night the next day, we reached Azarum. I showed our passports, but the sentry didn't salute and let us move on as we had expected.
He says, Effendi, there is somebody important who badly wants to see you.
A German lieutenant came from the guardhouse. He jumped onto our running board and motioned that we should drive towards a large building with sentries outside.
You must see the section chief.
Very well.
By the waters of Babylon, we sat down and wept. I fear, Major, we'll soon be remembering Zion.
Peter, where's Hussein?
He must have slipped away somehow.
The man you wanted to question, Colonel von Stumm.
Oh, Lord. The game's up this time.
So, my little Dutchman, we meet again. And you, Herr Blenkiron. I never liked the look of you. You babbled too much, like all your damned Americans.
Well, I guess your personal dislike hasn't anything to do with the matter. If you're the boss here, I'll thank you to cast your eye over these passports, for you can't stand waiting forever.
Doc, I'll teach you manners.
No. Keep your distance. I got you covered, and I'll make a hole in your bullet head if you lay a hand on me.
I'm going to have you disarmed, gentlemen. Either you give up your pistols to the lieutenant, or I will call the sentries and have you stripped and searched.
Better do as the man says, boys. It's too cold for anything else.
Sensible, Herr Blenkiron. We can conduct our conversation more pleasantly without pistols. Your game is up, Herr Brandt. These fools of Turkish police said the Dutchmen were dead. But I believe the good God had spared them for me, though I didn't think to find this plump old partridge. My God! By the time I have done with you, your mothers in their graves will weep that they ever bore you.
If you're going to play any ugly games on me, I'd like you to know that I'm an American citizen, and you'll sweat blood for it later. That's fair warning, Colonel Stumm.
Yes, no, hi. We shall have long and happy hours together. I am going to make you comfortable in the cellar. You will be safer there than in the town jail, for it is a trifle drafty. It lets things in, and it might let things out.
Oh, well, Major, I reckon it wants a good old-fashioned copper-bottomed miracle to get us out of this dungeon.
Only if there were a window. That would be miracle enough for me.
Yeah, there'd be no windows, Dick. We're underground.
But Sandy's somewhere outside with the companions.
I think we should try to get some sleep.
Yeah, Mr. Pienaar's right, Major. We should all be prepared for what tomorrow might bring.
Von Stumm.
Madame von Einem. Tell me, Major, what do you think of her?
Well, Sandy and I are impressed. It's no good denying it. But we're too interested to be scared. Old Peter doesn't give a rush. Man, woman, or hippogriff, it's all the same to you, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm an easygoing man.
She makes me feel like a bird confronted by a rattlesnake.
Perhaps you're in love with her, Mr. Blenkiron.
No, sir. I haven't got no sort of affection for that lady. My trouble is, we Americans haven't got the right poise for dealing with that kind of female. We aren't used to regarding women as anything except angels and children. Consequently, when we find one playing the biggest kind of man's game, we can't place her. I wish I had you boys' upbringing.
Dick, there's someone at the door.
Effendi. Hussein? Yes. You must follow me. You must be silent.
Lead on, Macduff.
Come. We travel across the rooftops.
Oh, lordy.
Hussein led us up to a little courtyard, above which the walls rose like cliffs. One was covered in a stout wooden trellis. It was child's play for Peter and me to climb it. But Blenkiron...
Take his other arm, Peter. We'll haul him up.
Come on, Buzz. I'm really grateful to you boys.
We crawled along a broadish wall and then up a sloping buttress onto the flat roof of the house. Hussein took us onto a ledge, past a stack of chimneys to another building, slightly lower. We dropped as softly as possible to the roof.
Oh, no noise! There's a light in the window over there.
The window had two folding sashes, which clasped in the middle. Through a gap in them, I saw a lamplit room and Stumm sitting at a table littered with papers. He turned to consult some document and made a marking on the map before him. Then he suddenly rose, stretched himself, and went out of the room. I guessed he had gone to have a look at his prisoners, in which case the show was up. But what filled my mind was an insane desire to get a sight of that map.
Harry! The master is waiting for you.
I'm going to have a look inside. It won't take long. I'll catch you up.
We shall wait for you on the roof of the house by the mosque.
The flimsy clasp gave in at the first pull, and the sashes swung open. I scrambled in, crumpled up the map in my pocket, climbed back onto the roof, and started after the others.
Come on, we've got to move fast. I've been burgling Stumm's private office. Got his map.
So that's what the hullabaloo's all about.
Where's Hussein?
Left us here and disappeared again.
Hussein, you should go into pantomime. First you vanish, then you pop up through a trapdoor.
My lords, you must now all pop down through the trapdoor.
Where are we, Hussein?
In the house of the master. But you must stay quiet in the attic. The Frankish lady is here.
Come on.
Hussein brought us food, and as soon as the meal was over, we had stretched out on a pile of straw in the corner of the attic and fallen asleep.
Leave the lamp here,
Hussein. Yes,
master.
Lamps of caution. It's Captain Arbuthnot.
It was the sight of a new Sandy that made Blenkiron exclaim in astonishment. The pelts and foxskin cap had gone, and he wore instead a long linen tunic, clasped at the waist by a broad girdle. A strange green turban adorned his head, and as he pushed it back, I saw that his head had been shaved.
He doesn't look well, Dick.
Sandy, old man, have you been sick?
No, not sick. My body's right enough. But for the last few days, I've been living in hell.
Look at me, Sandy. Straighten the eyes. Great heavens, man, you've been drugged.
Drugged? Yes, I have been drugged, but not by any physic.
We'll look after you. Take your time, old man, and tell us all about it.
It does me good to hear your voice, Dick. It reminds me of clean, honest things.
Well, I'll come back, never fear. We're at the last lap now. You've got to tell me what the new snag is. Is it that woman?
Woman? She's a she-devil. It isn't madness that's wrong with her. She's as sane as you and as cool as Blenkiron. Her life is an infernal game of chess, and she plays with souls for pawns. She's evil.
Evil. Back up, old chap. This isn't like you. What's happened?
Greenmantle's dead.
What?
He died that night I saw you, Dick. We buried him secretly by her order in the garden of the villa. Then came the trouble about his successor. The four ministers would be no party to a swindle. They were as immovable as a granite hill, and she knew it. Then they too died.
Murdered?
Murdered. All four in one morning. I don't know how, but I helped to bury them. And it will haunt me to my dying day.
Then the prophet is gone, and the humbug is over.
No, the prophet still lives. She's found a successor. Why do I wear these clothes? Because I am Greenmantle.
You?
I am the Kabai Huria for all Islam. In 3 days' time, I will reveal myself to my people and wear on my breast the green ephod of the prophet. Only, you see, I won't. I will cut my throat first. There's no way. No way but death. We're done for, all of us. At best, you have 3 days, and then you too will be dead.
Oh, Sandy, what has she done to you?
Oh, she has made me her accomplice. I did all she asked and joined in her game. She was very candid, you know. She laughs at the faith of Islam, but she has her own dreams and they consume her. She has, it's horrible, but she has this kind of crazy liking for me. When we have reclaimed the East, I am to be by her side as she rides into Jerusalem. And there have been moments, only moments, I swear to God, when I have been fired myself by her madness.
Oh, I am blessed if I listen to this goddamn stuff. You've got to get busy, Major, and pump some sense into your friends.
Sandy, you ass. Be thankful you have friends to keep you from playing the fool.
That's right.
I'm bossing the outfit now, and for all your confounded prophetic manners, you've got to take your orders from me. You aren't going to reveal yourself to your people. We're going to get clear away, and inside of a week we'll be having tea with the Grand Duke Nicholas.
How, Dick? How?
Because we've had an almighty piece of luck. I got into Stum's rooms and bagged his map. Now, look here. Do you see his notes? They haven't had time to fortify the peaks above Kara Gubek. If the Russians manage to get batteries there, the fort will fall.
Well, Stum's right. The whole defense of Erzurum depends on that fort, and it's a broken reed if one knows where the weakness lies.
Yes.
Once the Russians get Kara Gubek, they've turned the main position.
Exactly. And by hook or by crook, we've got to get that information through to them. Peter.
Yeah, Dick.
Peter, old man, the biggest job of your life is before you.
Good. I'm getting stiff with doing nothing.
If you can get this map through to the Grand Duke's staff, Stum's goose is cooked. In 3 days, the Cossacks will be in the streets of Erzurum.
Let me go. I talk the lingo, and I can pass as a Turk. I'm a million times likely to get through. For God's sake, let me go.
No, you need the captain here, Dick.
Peter's right, Sandy. If you disappear, the whole show's busted too soon. And the three of us left behind will be strung up before morning.
Yes.
No, my son. You're going to escape. But it will be with Blenkiron and me. Tell me, how many of the companions will stick by you?
Oh, the whole half dozen. They'd follow me through hell if I bade them.
Good. Now, see here on the map. The Russians are around Erzurum in a broad half-moon. If we can get over the pass unobserved, we're bound to strike a Russian column the next day.
Yes.
We and your six ruffians are going to slip off into the darkness.
Well, tomorrow I've got some kind of infernal fast to observe. And the next day, that woman will be coaching me for my part. I believe the best time would be the third night, the eve of the revelation. She's bound to leave me alone that night.
Very well. It won't be much fun sitting waiting and worrying about old Peter, but we must keep our heads and risk nothing by being in a hurry.
Master, she is asking for you.
I'm coming, Husband. Here's my hand, Mr. Pinar. You're the bravest man I ever met. Good luck.
Thank you, Captain. I do not say I will succeed. If I sit in ours as much longer, I shall get old.
No, we shall all succeed. You fellows have given me a new lease of life.
Go.
I've got a plan now, and I can set my teeth and stick it out.
God, the ears to the nose, God, the poor heather.
Good man. Have you finished praying? I am not disturbing you. I come each evening to my garden to watch the sun set over Erzurum. Look. Look north. See how the snow-covered heights burn red in the setting sun. Should the Russians try to attack the city, the great hills would run red with their blood. Tomorrow is the eve of revelation. You will spend that night alone in prayer and fasting. The next day, Guru Mandal will be shown to the people, and the great army of the faithful will rise and follow us. You look troubled, poet. You seek truth. So also do I, and if we use a lie, it is only to break down a greater. You are of my household in spirit, and you alone of all men I have seen fit to ride with me on my mission. The moon is rising. Come, take off your cloak.
Yes.
It is time for you to don the green ephod. Let me help you. I shall be your handmaiden. Now you are the Gabaihurie. Oh, how cool the silk. How it shines in the moonlight. Soon the world will shine in the light of a new dawn. A sun will rise which will burn up all who oppose me. You shiver. Are you cold, Grunmantle? Come, poet. My rooms are warm. The fire is burning, my master. The day of our glory is near. Germany may fail, but I shall not fail. None shall thwart Hilda von Einem. None. None!
There were 9 horses for 9 riders. We started 3 hours before dawn on the 3rd day after Peter's departure, the eve of the revelation. Hussein rode first, with me at his side. Sandy followed, a tall figure swathed to the eyes in a cloak. I wanted to speak to him, but somehow I didn't dare. Blenkiron and the other 5 companions brought up the rear.
It is time to leave the road, or we may meet inquisitive folk.
Can you guide us in this mist, Hussein? Devil's own luck.
I do not know, my lord. I had counted on seeing the hills.
We have a map and compass. These make slow traveling. Pray God it lifts.
The ground we were riding over was, for all the world, like a Scotch moor. It was bad going, and the fog made it hopeless to steer a good course. Suddenly the mist blew back and revealed a wedge of country right across to the hills beyond. It was a clear view, every object standing out wet and sharp in the light of morning. It showed a bridge with Turkish horsemen drawn up across it and cavalry pickets moving along the far bank of a river.
God! Kiss him!
This mist was sent from hell. These cursed Zaptis have seen us. Our road is cut.
Let's take a chance and cross the river.
No! The cavalry on the other side are moving up.
I don't know how you fellows feel, but I'm not going to be taken. There's nothing left to do except to find a good place and put up a fight. We can sell our lives dearly.
I'm with you, Captain Arbuthnot.
Now, it's hell for Leonard we find a place for a stand. The game's against us this time.
Go!
We rode towards the hills. On the crest of a rise, I looked down on a broad glen with a road winding up it to a pass in the range. To the south, I saw what I had been watching for. A little hill split the valley, and on its top was a circle of rocks.
Over to the south! There's our fort! If we once reach it, we can hold it for a week! Sit down and ride for it!
Alaskina!
We climbed to the top of the hill, where a circle of rocks formed a natural parapet. Our pursuers never had a chance, for the whole party being not above 2 dozen, they were too few. I think we killed 3 and wounded about 6, while the rest fell back toward the road. In a quarter of an hour, it was all over.
Ha! Well done, boys! They're on the run!
That's only the overture. The opera will soon begin.
They are dogs of Kurds. Only a Kurdish howler would fire on the livery of the cab, huh?
I turned to look at Sandy. He had discarded his cloak and stood up in the strangest costume man had ever worn in battle. Somewhere he had procured field boots and an old pair of riding breeches. Above these, reaching almost to his knees, he had a wonderful silk jibber of bright emerald. No rarer or costlier garment was ever exposed to bullets on a bleak winter hill.
Oh,
These are ranging shots. The Russians are trying to shell the main road from the heights. It would be an odd irony if we became the targets of friendly guns.
Well, before that, the Turks might get a gun up here and blow us to bits in seconds.
Now, please God, the Russians keep them too busy for that.
Yeah.
Master, there are men moving below in the mist.
Keep your eyes on the fog. Shoot at the first sign.
Grunmantel!
It is she. Hilda von Einem has come for her prophet.
Down there, on the edge of the mist.
I come to offer terms, Richard Hanno. Will you permit me to enter?
Yes, Madame von Einem.
She climbed up and stepped over the rocks as lightly as a deer. Her clothes were strange. Spurred boots and breeches over which fell a short green kirtle. A little cap skewered with a jeweled pin was on her head, and a cape hung from her shoulders. She had leather gauntlets on her hands, and she carried for weapon a riding whip. The fog crystals clung to her hair, and a silvery film of mist lay on her garments. As she stood there, her eyes like stars, I had to confess that she had her own loveliness. She might be a devil, but she was also a queen.
Grunmantel, uno tumu bibirmit senestos vermishtik.
Madam, I ask you to tell your business quick and to tell it in English. My friends must hear it as well as me.
Your friends? You are the Kaaba Ihuria. You wear the green mantle of the prophet. What has a prince to do with such hirelings?
You must know, madam, that I am a British officer.
And these others?
One is a brother officer in my regiment. The other is an American friend. But all three of us came east to destroy Greenmantle and your devilish ambitions. The people wait today for a revelation, but none will come.
I said I came to offer terms. I will still offer them, though they are other than I thought. For the fat American, I will send him home safely to his own country. I do not make war on such as he. You, Richard Hanno, I will hang before dusk. Grunmantel, I offer you the greatest career that mortal has known. Will you refuse that destiny?
I stay with my friends, madam.
I will be your people and your comrade. We are one in spirit. Will you deny all that has been between us?
You can offer me nothing that I desire. I am the servant of my country, and her enemies are mine. I have neither part or lot with you. That is my answer, Madame von Einem.
I have done with you. You have scorned me, but you have dug your own grave.
Sandy stood still, his face white except for the crimson weal left by Hilda von Einem's riding whip. She turned from him and leapt onto the rocky parapet. Once more the mist had risen, and across the hollow I saw a field gun in place, manned by Germans, not Turks. Hilda von Einem waved her hand to them and hastened down the hillside. There came the whistle of a Russian shell. Before I realized what had happened, Sandy was leaping down the hill. They were shooting at him, but he heeded them not. For a moment, he was out of sight. Then, he came back, walking quite slowly up the slope. He was carrying something in his arms. The enemy fired no more. Sandy laid his burden gently down. The cap had fallen off, and the hair was breaking loose. The face was very white, but there was no wound or bruise on it.
She was killed at once. Her back was broken by a shell fragment. Dick, we must bury her here. You see her. You see, she liked me, and I can make her no return than this.
With infinite slowness, using our hands and our knives, we made a shallow grave beside the parapet. When it was done, we covered her face with the linen cloak which Sandy had worn that morning. He lifted the body and laid it reverently in its place.
I did not know that anything could be so light.
Dusk was falling. The artillery was busy all around the horizon, and it seemed to me that the guns had come nearer. Sandy was watching the road below us with field glasses.
The gun is manned now by Germans and Austrians. There are no Turks. The men of Islam would not fire on the wearer of the green ephod. Oh, there's another gun in the fields to the east. They've got us on both sides. There's no way of escape.
What are they waiting for?
Hello. Here's someone I think we know. Take a look, Dick. The big fella standing just behind the gunners.
It's Sturm. He's come to see the destruction of his enemies.
I reckon that's pretty poor shooting.
No, on the contrary. They know their business. They're bracketing.
Gun! I think
my arm's broken. Anyone else hurt?
Not me, Dick.
Mr. Blenkiron, are you still with us?
Yes. Yes, but I've lost my patience cards.
Hussein, are any of you wounded?
No, Master. Thanks be to Allah.
Well, we may as well toss for it, Dick. There are only two ways. To stay here and be shelled or to try and break through. Either's pretty unhealthy.
There was no choice. We were pinned to the hilltop. Hilda von Einem was to have a noble pyre and goodly companions for the dark journey.
It's been hours since Sturm has fired. I wonder why.
It's Sturm's way. He's going to blow us to pieces, but he wants to torture us first.
Well, we'll disappoint him. But we won't be worried, old man.
If Peter has succeeded, he might tell the tale. But most likely he's lying dead somewhere in the no-man's land between the lines. As for us, Sandy, we shall never be heard of again.
It's a queer ending, Dick. We simply vanish into the infinite. The snow will soon cover us, and when the spring comes, there will only be a few bleached bones. Upon my soul, it is the kind of death I always wanted.
But our job's done. After all, we never expected to come out of this thing with our lives.
When do you look for the end?
Now. The sun's rising. Sturm wants daylight to get the full savor of his revenge.
Peter must have got through.
Look at that, Dick.
Kara Gubek has fallen.
God, glory to God, we won.
Oh, no. If you jump up and down like that, Major, you get plugged sure and good.
Yeah, they're not shooting. There are men riding down the glen, hundreds of them.
The gates of the south have yielded. It's the Cossacks. The Cossacks have taken the slope. Hooray! Hooray!
I had never seen a rout before. No more had Sturm, poor devil. He was a brute and a bully, but by God, he was a man. I saw him turn the gun on the maddened horde fleeing before the Cossacks. But he never fired it. The wave flowed round and then across him. I saw the butt ends of rifles crash onto his head and shoulders. And the next moment, the defeated army had passed over his body.
It's God's judgment, Major Hanny. A man who sets himself above his kind.
Sandy, did you? Where's Sandy?
He and the companions went to meet those Ruskies on horses.
Well, Cossacks?
If that's what they call themselves.
I looked down the glen. There was a cloud of grey cavalry on little wiry horses. A cloud which swept on like a flight of rainbows, with the steel of their lance heads glittering in the winter sun. They were riding for Erzurum. In the very front was one man. He was like the point of the steel spear soon to be driven home. He was turbaned, and against the snow I caught the dark sheen of emerald. He rode like one possessed, and above the din I heard him cry out.
Wild
As he passed, it seemed that the fleeing Turks were stricken still. They sank by the roadside with eyes fixed on his unheeding figure. Then I knew that the prophecy had been true, that their prophet had not failed them. The long-looked-for revelation had come. Greenmantle had appeared at last to an awaiting people.
Greenmantle by John Buchan, dramatized by Patricia Hanna. Richard Hannay was played by David Robb. Sandy Arbuthnot by James Fleet. John S. Blenkiron, Stuart Milligan. Hilda von Einem, Juliet Aubrey. Peter Pinar, John Glover. Ulrich von Stumm, Jack Clath. Hussein, Hash Shamshun. Balloon Seller, Matthew Pigeon. Other parts were played by the cast. The director was Bruce Young.